From the four corners of Southern California, this is The Hot Seat and You're In It with me, Max Schwartz. It starts right now. Today on the phone, I have Assistant Secretary of State for the Bureau of Education and Cultural Affairs, Evan Ryan. How are you, Assistant Secretary Ryan? Thank you very much for being our special guest this morning and taking time out of your busy Monday morning schedule to call in.
Thank you, Max. I'm really happy to join you. Thank you for having me.
My pleasure. So we have, I don't want to keep you waiting any longer, and that goes for our audience as well. So without further ado, let's get started. What brings you to Los Angeles and USC today, and how long are you here, and what else are you doing?
So I'm in Los Angeles for the Fulbright Foreign Scholarship Board meeting, but while I was here, I wanted to connect with the students at USC in the public diplomacy realm, and I'm really excited to be able to meet with them later today.
Okay, are you the State Department's delegate to that scholarship board?
Yes, well, we have a chair of the board, but I oversee the board.
Okay, so how do you believe your previous experience as a member of communication departments for various politicians has helped you with your current job and will help you in the future with your current job, which involves communicating not only domestically but abroad with foreign governments?
That's a very good question. So previously I worked for First Lady Hillary Clinton and as well as most recently for Vice President Biden, and I think both of those experiences have helped build the foundation for what I'm doing today. When I worked for Hillary, I was able to travel to over 20 countries around the world, and it really opened my eyes into the power of the American message overseas and how we can help people understand our democracy and civil society and how it can help them build their own. It was a really fascinating glimpse into how American values can impact people around the globe. And then when I worked with Vice President Biden, I worked as his assistant for intergovernmental affairs and public engagement. And in that role, I dealt with constituency groups and governors and mayors and tried to make sure they understood where the White House and the administration stood on various issues, while also making sure that we heard their own opinions and their own ideas. So the great thing about that job was really convening voices and trying to move the agenda forward by working with a variety of people. So I think both of those experiences will really help me moving forward as I deal with, you know, people around the world, as I deal with, you know, various people who come here on exchange programs and can help communicate to them about what America is about, what we hope will help them.
Okay, and I would like to use that as a segue now into your new job. And I want to first, I would like to start off, for those that don't know, what does the Bureau of Education and Cultural Affairs, and what is it, and what is your role?
So the Bureau of Educational and Cultural Affairs oversees approximately 140 exchange programs, educational and cultural exchange programs, and total, annually, we have about 300,000 participants. So I oversee the Bureau. And these programs, they range from well-known programs like the Fulbright program, which we were just talked about earlier, to programs like Tech Women. Tech Women is a really interesting program that brings young, burgeoning tech entrepreneurs to the United States to connect with Silicon Valley counterparts and learn from their Silicon Valley counterparts and then be able to bring those experiences and new skills and new ideas back to the Middle East. It's a really really interesting way for women to share with one another what their talents, their ideas, and help build their businesses and move their businesses forward.
And you talk about people gaining skills here and taking them back to the Middle East. One of President Obama's points for immigration reform is to give students visas to be here permanently so that way they don't leave. What is your position on that? Would you prefer that these people take their skills back to their home country so they can help develop that country, or would you rather them stay here?
Yeah, no, it's an excellent question, and it's a question we get a lot. I'll say the Bureau of Educational and Cultural Affairs, our focus is bring people here, and they can be students or professionals, and then have them return to their country because that's what exchange is about, and the benefits, that's our goal and our focus is exchange because they do bring those skills back to their country, but they also bring a different perception of the United States back to their country. Their eyes are open into what we're about, and also that then develops long-term relationships. We always think in the Bureau of Educational and Cultural Affairs that our experiences with exchange students help build long-term relationships that then pay dividends down the road. For instance, you know, Secretary Kerry or the president is talking to a world leader who's been through one of our programs. That can just change the dynamic of that relationship, that diplomatic relationship, exponentially if they've been on an exchange program earlier.
Okay. And I'd like to use that to once again segue into our discussion about the Middle East, and we'll come back to the United States in a moment. But Pakistan recently banned a book by Malala. And for those that don't know, she's the Pakistani schoolgirl that was shot in the head by the Taliban for advocating education for girls and young women. So what, if anything, is the United States doing about that decision, either directly or indirectly?
You know, and every time we have a diplomatic meeting of any sort, anytime Secretary Kerry has a bilateral meeting, he promotes education and the idea that education can lift a society and how important it is for a society's overall health and well-being, but also for global relations and our future. And he also works very hard, as do all of my colleagues across the State Department, on civil society and building civil society outreach through our own mechanisms to help make sure that people have the right tools to view education through the right lens. So we're always working on that in every, whether it be the regional bureaus or the functional bureaus, as we spoke about earlier. Everyone is promoting education as a resource and a tool for each society, as well as building an individual country's civil society structure. So those are things that are raised in every diplomatic exchange. Because we believe education and freedom of speech are part of a way any country is going to rise and be able to function in the best possible way. So we promote that in every way we can.
And the United States may preach it, and that's fantastic, and that's always been an emphasis of Obama's bilateral talks with other leaders. But is the United States doing anything on the ground or anything other than formal conversations?
In terms of
trying to promote and encourage or discourage other governments from pursuing legislation or pursuing rules that are like this in Pakistan?
Oh, I mean, I think what they're doing in every diplomatic context, I know that, you know, we have an ambassador for global women's issues, and this is a big issue for her, for Kathy Russell, which is in every dealing that she has diplomatically with a country that is working against, as you say, women or girls' education, she's helping to work with both civil society, which is really what she does every single place that she can, that where there's an issue like this, but also when she can also work with the government, she does that as well.
Are there any programs where the U.S., where these countries have accepted U.S. information to be distributed amongst the people and to the schools, or is the U.S. not involved in that way?
What do you mean?
In terms of educational material, like pamphlets or books.
Well, between USAID and the State Department, we try to assist any country that is looking for, you know, help. You know, each country manages their own educational system. So it's really a question of whether we can, you know, help them with material, whether we can work with the local entities to help them with material, whether they're open to that or not. We, of course, want to be helpful in any fashion that we can.
Okay. And I'd like to continue on that note and talk about the main reason this happened was because of what the Taliban did. What is your department and the rest of the State Department doing to make sure that the Taliban doesn't have that much influence in other countries in the Middle East and around the world?
Well, I can tell you what we in ECA are doing ourselves is, you know, by bringing people here for exchange programs, we're hoping that we're opening their eyes and broadening their horizons and letting them see their other opportunities in the world. We think that the 21st century is a marketplace of ideas. And so if we can spread the ideas of democracy, of civil discourse, and we can help people understand that that's the way to best make sure everyone has a level playing field, then that is, in essence, working against terrorist organizations and their own goals. So that's what we try to do, is we just try to engage people. We try to give them opportunities. And exchange programs are an incredibly, incredibly powerful tool. So we need to counter the narratives of terrorist organizations with our own ideas and our own connections with people, you know, and connecting people to the United States and to our own ideas and our own way of life. That helps open eyes and perhaps change people's path. And I think that's a really important way that we can engage and try to fight back against terrorist organizations. But we also have to work, and we do find ways to do this, as well as my colleagues in other bureaus. We just try to find ways to empower local, credible organizations on the ground in some of these countries where they're dealing with these issues, and so that they can actually do the same, that they can promote civil discourse, civil society, ideas, education that will bring their country forward. And because people, the most important thing is, I think, right now, with as you pointed out, what we're up against in terms of terrorist rhetoric, the most important thing is providing people with an alternative and showing people that there's an open alternative way of life and trying to show them that path. And so that's what we've tried to do.
Are foreign leaders, actual or heads of government or heads of state, part of these exchange programs? If not, how are the ordinary people or the people not in government going to go take the skills they learned back and try to push that and influence the government to step away from the Taliban, for instance?
It's a good question. So what's interesting is I mentioned, you know, world leaders and how that would change our dynamic if they've been through exchange programs. Mm-hmm. To date, we have about 360 world leaders who've been through at some point in time one of our exchange programs. So that's an amazing statistic, we think. In some fashion, at some point in their career, in their life, they've come over on one of our exchange programs. But to answer your question to how are people coming here, we work with our embassies, mm-hmm. and our embassies or people apply for, it depends on what the program is. Some programs people go online and apply for. Some programs our embassies try to help us find. We're saying, oh, we have a program for Murrow Fellows, which is a program mm-hmm. for journalists around the world. Well, the embassy will then, you know, look and see, oh, do we have some journalists who might want to come on this exchange program? So between our embassies identifying people and people applying, that's how we get people to come through on our exchange programs.
Is your expectation, or is the department's expectation or hope, that these ordinary people would somehow go back, or the people that are not heads of state or heads of government, go back to their country and try to have massive influence? Because I don't understand how that can be a realistic expectation.
Well, no, I wouldn't even say massive influence. I would say locally, amongst their family and friends, how powerful that is, even for that person to come home. And I've even heard this in the limited time I've been here, is, you know, I've been in Washington with exchange participants who say, oh my goodness, this America is not the America that I was told. It's different. It's better. You all are allowed to express your opinions. You're allowed to disagree. You're allowed to express your thoughts about the government. And they didn't realize that. Well, then they go home to their country and they tell their family and friends, wow, the America that we've heard about is not at all what it was. This is what America really is. I think that alone is powerful, to just be able to share that with your family and friends. And then secondarily, who knows where that person ends up down the line, as we've talked about. Who knows if that person becomes a leader in civic society, a leader in government, a journalist who's a leader in the media. We're really looking at the long road here for us in the Bureau of Educational and Cultural Affairs. We're looking at the long term.
So would the goal down the line be that all of these people have rise up and eventually kick the Taliban out, essentially?
Well, you know, I think what we're doing is helping them build their own ideas, open their eyes, and then they can go back. And I even saw this the other day. I was fortunate enough to take part in a working lunch with Afghan women. Mm-hmm. And they were here in the U.S., and they were working with partners here in the U.S. from NGOs and civil society to help them develop their own ideas of what they can do in their organizations back home to help be the alternative, as I mentioned, be the alternative to the Taliban. How can they show that girls' education is important, and what tools can we help give them to do that? And that was something that we were all around the table discussing just on Friday at Georgetown University in this working lunch. And so I think it's amazing what people can do locally to provide alternatives in the case that you're specifically talking about. And the other thing that's interesting is, just as an example, these women will return. They will encourage, one woman is running a school for girls. They will encourage more young girls in the villages to come to these schools. And then these girls grow up. So this is what we're talking about, the long term. Mm-hmm. They grow up. They're able to help provide for their families. They're educated. They're able to work. And then that changes the opinion maybe of one or two people who thought, I thought, you know, we weren't supposed to educate girls. But look, now this young woman is helping to provide for her family, and that family, their welfare is better. They're better off. And then that might change that one mind. So I'm not saying, you know, that there's a direct sort of encounter with the Taliban on the part of these people on a daily basis when they return. What I am saying is that they are then providing alternatives in their communities. They are helping to slowly lift up and show their villages and communities a different path. Okay. And I think down the road, that can pay huge dividends in the case that you're specifically talking about when it comes to the Taliban.
Okay. And I know we're running short on time, but I have one more question for you. And the United States is not what, in going back to the Western United States, it's not nearly what it was in education, and especially we're lagging behind in pre-kindergarten education, and Obama has emphasized that in his State of the Union speech. How is the United States able to preach something that they're not the best at? And I know, granted, we're probably better than the places we're going to preach, but how is it preaching to these countries when knowing we're not nearly as good as we could be or should be?
Well, I know that, as you pointed out, you know, we far surpass a lot of these places in that regard. But, you know, as you also pointed out, this is a real priority for President Obama and our colleagues at the Department of Education. And it's really something that I feel like I should best leave to Secretary Duncan and his staff. But I will say that, you know, across the board still, our experiences, U.S. education and the U.S. education system is something that globally people aspire to. And that's what the Bureau of Educational and Cultural Affairs, that's what we really work to bridge divides with, is by, you know, our education system being an education system that people do aspire to. We try to bring people here on exchange programs. We've also recently tried to show people what the community college model is, mm-hmm. and we've had some countries very interested in working with us on learning more about our community college model, which is another path to education for many people. So we are trying still. We do find still that the U.S. education system is something that people really want to come and experience if they can, and then if not, also export, as we are trying to do with our community college model.
Okay, and one more yes or no answer here. From the diplomatic standpoint, is it awkward going into these educations preaching something we do not practice, or practice not as well as we should? Sort of going into what you said, but quick yes or no answer. Is it awkward?
I would say no. I believe the U.S. education system is still something that's people all around the world look to, and I would say I know that in the Bureau of Educational and Cultural Affairs, we're dealing with college students, graduate students, and high school students, and that everybody wants to come and partake in that.
Okay, thank you very much for joining me in the hot seat today, Assistant Secretary Ryan. It was a pleasure having you on the show, and I really, really appreciate you taking the time to spend part of your morning here with us. And from all of us here at the hot seat, we wish you a fantastic end of your Los Angeles trip and a safe flight back to Washington. The Hot Seat After Hour starts right now. You can email me at thehotseatwithmaxschwartz@gmail.com, or you can tweet me at MaxSchwartzTV. You can also read and follow my blog at maxschwartztv.blogspot.com. Thank you very much for listening. I hope you will join me next time with California State Assembly Majority Leader Tony Atkins.